You listen to my show? He's like, absolutely not.
You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thanks for joining us on iTunes, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, wherever you're coming to us from. We appreciate you tuning in every week on Thursdays. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us. We would love to build the profile of the show, and we could use your help. If you're a loyal listener, tell a friend. We would really appreciate it. And while you're downloading on iTunes, give us a few stars. That does help us climb the ladder, and we deeply appreciate it. You can also reach us via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @hot_garbage. And again, couldn't do this without you, except we would every single week.
You can't forget that Instagram.
Oh, Hurt Gerbish?
Yeah, Hurt Gerbish.
You can follow us on Instagram at Hurt Gerbish. Exactly like it's spelled exactly like it sounds. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the candle in the wind to my candle box, my dear friend Andy.
How's it going?
It is good, Andy.
Boobly whoa!
There he is, toasting us all. Our silent partner Nate is joining us, as always, making the sound happen. Andy, what's good, brother?
Man, life is good. I'm eating cheese again.
Oh, back on the cheese wagon.
Yeah, I'm eating cheese again. I'm just having to stay away from all vegetables.
Oh, okay.
And roughage.
So. Has that been a challenge? Not as hard as the cheese, I would imagine.
I mean, it's a bummer because I do love Caesar salad.
Oh, yeah. A good Caesar salad.
So I've been eating a lot of it just to prove to the people that I can eat
that your colon is up to the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. They don't know me, my body.
Right. Well, you tell them.
Yeah. That could be the steroids talking. I'm on a lot of steroids.
Yeah, you've been all roided up for a couple of weeks now.
I've flexed for this entire episode. Every muscle in my body. I'm very tired.
Very tense. Well, we had an awesome show tonight. We had Hutch Harris of the Thermals joining us. So we were really excited to have him. He talked about the Thermals' music and a little bit of their process, but also about his comedy as he's about a year and a half into a stand-up career. He's going to be participating at Bridge City Comedy Festival. Bridgetown Comedy Fest, just like the town we live in, Bridgetown.
The Bridgetown City.
It's all this week, starting today, the day you're listening to this episode, and going through Sunday. So be sure to look for Hutch and a lot of great comedians on that lineup. But we had an awesome conversation. He played some great music, talked about the evolution of Portland's comedy and music scenes, his writing process, and we had a good time. So enjoy this conversation between me, Andy, Nate, and Hutch Harris of the Thermals.
Snarf.
I mean, a lot of records just need repeated listens. That's why reviewing records can be so unfair, because someone listens to your record one time and give you a review of it.
And I don't know, like, how anyone need can do that.
A lot of records you need, like most records, you need to listen to them multiple times to really get it.
Some of my favorite albums, like the Beastie Boys, when they came out with Ill Communication, I was like, oh no, this is weird. They're like doing all these weird instrumental takes and all these weird like interludes. Turns out that's my favorite Beastie Boys album. It just took me, you know, a month of listening to it all the time. But that was also in a different time when I was listening to cassette tapes, and it was just like,
right.
I'm listening to the whole album. I'm not going to skip ahead or anything.
As a listener, will you give something a chance multiple times? So if someone hands you something and you give it a listen, it doesn't grab you right away, do you feel
See, now that I said that, I don't know. I'll give... Maybe if someone's really pushing me, but I listen to like a lot of music and I listen to a lot of new music because I want to stay up and I want to know what's going on. But honestly, I will listen to like a whole record and I will like, what I try to do now is like really listen to something and not just casually. Because before I think I would casually listen to some, put something on, but you're doing other stuff.
Right.
Which is fine when you know a record, but like, especially when we were on tour, I would like sit in the back of the van with headphones and like, I asked people, like on Twitter or whatever, like, hey, you know, what's something new I should listen to? And if I put on someone's record, I would just really, really listen because I want something to grab me. But if nothing really grabs me and I'm like listening very hard, these days I will just go on to the next thing because there's so many records.
Do you feel like it's possible, this might be an age thing too, do you feel like it's still possible for you to have the same kind of attachment to a new piece of music that you did when you were like in high school?
This is like always on my mind. I feel like I'm always talking or like writing about this because
this is stuff that I'm interested in because tracking my progression as a listener is important to me.
Well, how old are you right now?
33.
Okay, so I turned 40. I'll turn 41 this year. And like, I mean, really, like, to be brutally honest, like nothing will affect me in the way that it affected me like when I was 16 or whatever, just because that's when you're just still growing and taking all this shit in. And
can you still take more music as personally as you did back then?
Definitely. Okay. And I can still like love music, but it's not going to shape me. You know, I say that, but who knows? Maybe like when I'm 60, I'll be like, whoa, when I was 40, these records really shaped me. Maybe. But yeah, I mean, I'm just going to have, you know, everyone. And that's why people always say like, oh, music was so good when I was in high school and then it got worse. Well, it didn't get worse. You just got older and it just is not going to affect you that way.
You're just working with those raw teenage nerves where you're just absorbing things in a totally personal level where it affects you in a different way than a jaded adult.
There's also, for me, I feel like music is less associated with experiences than it used to be then. Like, that used to be like where I was when I heard something was the memory that informed my opinion of a piece of music in a very fundamental way. Whereas now I will absorb a lot of new music, but I'm doing it at my desk.
But that's still you being older.
That's true. So my experiences are worse then. That's basically
what it is. Well, they're just different because there are still people like experiencing shit. And it still is like a lot on the internet, but there's definitely, you know, it's just like, it's one of the greatest things about music is like how important it is to people. And I always think about like when you're in high school or junior high, like the bands that you like are so important to you and like your clique. And then also the bands that you hate, like you align yourself with some music. And then also what you don't like becomes such a part of your personality.
I talk about this all the time, how we used to be very just defined by the type of music we listened to. And you would be able to paint someone with a pretty broad brush based on what they listened to.
Yeah.
In a way that was very visceral, you know, as an obnoxious 15.
We all judge each other like super hard on taste.
Yeah. I made a lot of friends based on, oh, you like this band, so do I.
Definitely.
You
know? Right.
That's how my whole friend base was kind of put together.
I remember being on like AOL and using chat rooms and stuff, and you would build that profile and like agonizing over the bands that I listed because it was so important that I be identified in the proper way.
What year is that? Because I missed that.
This is, let's say, 96. Something like 97.
Right.
Right, I mean, probably my eighth grade year, freshman year of high school, something like that.
Yeah.
So you didn't have that experience where you were projecting yourself in a very specific way.
I mean, I was, but it wasn't that. It wasn't specifically. It wasn't like on the internet because I graduated in 93. But I mean, still what you're describing is the same.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the music you like becomes what you are in a lot of ways.
Especially if you're into punk and you like back patches. And then you can put that list of bands that you're into right on your back and everyone can see it.
Right. Did you?
Yeah, I really did. I really wanted to. I tried to go all in. I had my friend Kevin, who was a dude who was like, no, don't do that. You're not really punk. You live in the country. You're Andy.
He took the safety pins off your backpack.
You cannot wear that butt patch. The butt flap patch. Yeah.
Well, that
it was good that he called me on that shit, though, because he was right. Because I was ready to go, okay, I'm going to put 13 patches on my fucking coat today. You got to build up to that. You got to put like one on of like a,
wait,
every once
who
in a while.
Who are the bands?
Subhumans, Osrotten, Crucifix.
Cool. Wait.
So you were going legit with the patches though. That wasn't
these are
like
bands I legitimately.
It
loved,
wasn't just like a NoFX patch or a Real Big Fish patch or something like that. You were going legit. You were doing your best to swallow it all in one bite.
And I would have to take my mom would have to give me a ride to the other side of town to go to Radio Killjoy where they had the real punk patches. Yeah. Or I'd get them at a show, like Whorehouse of Representatives or something. But, yeah. I always kept it pretty light with the patches. I just had, like, my one Black Label beer patch that was pretty cool.
So you kept it, yeah. You were a little more discerning after your friend course corrected you. So for you, Hutch, someone who's kind of made, I mean, your life is music in a pretty fundamental way.
Right, for sure.
So it is sort of wound up in your identity. How do you, contextualize your relationship to music as an adult now?
I mean, I still think music is so important. Like, it's important to me. And you see, like, I think a lot about it when I watch a movie. And a movie gets really dramatic and it affects you so much. And, like, the hair on your neck will stand up and you'll just, like, feel it so much. A lot of time, just what you're feeling is the music.
Yeah.
Like, you could watch that same scene without the music and feel almost nothing. you could listen to the music without the scene, and you will maybe feel, you know, it's a good combination, but like you
at least
will
90%
still
of what you were supposed
something.
To feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if it's like like a classical score or like a rock song, like it's cool though, because it's like music. I don't know if there's anything else like that, that like other art needs music,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make like music doesn't need visuals at all, but like a lot of visuals need music.
Are there other art mediums that have influenced your music? Have they? Has there been
anything?
Oh
yeah, I think about movies all the time.
Yeah, that's a big part of
like
creation
making,
for you.
Yeah, you know, making a punk song or just, you know, any song like a movie, or like making a punk song like an action movie.
That's interesting. So is it about the energy, or is there something maybe even narratively or specific emotionally that you're trying to convey
with that
comparison? It's
like not always narrative, but like maybe some darkness that would like be in a film too.
So it acts as like a guiding principle for when you're getting in the headspace to create that kind of song.
Well, just something like to give you a feeling, you know, yeah. Like a lot of times what we like in music or in movies, a lot of times like in both or like in a movie, you're not like, it's not that you're like loving what the plot is. It's just like, it's giving you this feeling and you're in that world and you like being in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's interesting and exciting to mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
That's why I love the new Scooby-Doo movie. Cause fuck,
just puts
I
you
could really get in that character.
Did you get in there?
Yeah.
You should listen to it with The Dark Side of the Moon. It's like 50% synced up. Okay. But when it is locked in.
Oh, man. Yeah. I used to sit around and play music to cartoons all the time trying to get them to sync up. It's magic.
We recorded a hip-hop album like 5 years ago, and when we did that, we did it in this barn studio that had a projection screen, and we brought the Looney Tunes classic like DVDs, and we just had that while we were recording hip-hop all day, just in the background.
Nice.
And that was awesome.
We would watch All Dogs Go to Heaven and play Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
That part where the, you know, his soul is going to go to hell in that movie, that used to get to me.
It's pretty freaky.
It is pretty affecting for a kid.
Yeah.
This year, I was watching Seinfeld episodes with the sound off and just had Minor Threat.
That's amazing.
It was. I don't even remember like how I got to that point, but it was
sounds very existential.
Awesome. They're just like yelling at each other like a lot of the time. It was really good.
Hutch, I heard you on Song Exploder,
right
on that podcast, and in that, I was really interested when you would talk about, for that first Thermals record that was just you, how your sort of guiding principle was just, let's make it as stripped down and as simple and as not thoughtless, but not overthought.
Right, right.
Is that still your philosophy, or is there a philosophy for you as a musician?
That's like the base for like the band, the Thermals, like as a project, but that's not totally how I think. And also the Thermals had to grow.
Sure.
And like be different. I think I remember saying something on that show like, there has to be like this caveman, especially for the drums, like
right.
just really bass, like just like how simple could something be?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it has to go somewhere from there. I feel like each Thermals record just progresses just a little bit.
Sure.
But you don't want to just do that same thing for every record just because it gets boring, I think.
Well, I there's always little flourishes to Thermal songs that I've always really liked. So they, in a sense, they are kind of very straightforward, energy-based, kind of pop-based
right.
punk rock.
Right.
And that seems to be the scaffolding that carries through, but the little flourishes seem to change a lot. So when your guiding principle is a little bit of simplicity, how do you know when to tweak, when to leave something alone?
I think like rules for the whole record, like as a project, are good. Like not the new record we made, but the one before Desperate Ground is just like, I think a lot of the rules were like no overdubs or double the guitars, mm-hmm. no overdubs, no solos. I would just sing like no one else would sing. We would record all the vocals. I recorded the vocals through just this old Rode mic that I have through a 4-track so that it would be like, because it was recorded in a good studio, but made to sound like a home recording.
Right.
Like recorded in a good studio.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys use click tracks? Was that off limits?
There were click tracks for all of those songs. There were not for the record we just made.
Okay.
Weston was our drummer. He was glad to like not do the click track again, and it was good for sure. Not that it was bad for the last one, but just like what we did for the new one was. instead of like playing a song to a click track and you play it, you're like, okay, do it till you think you nailed it. Mm-hmm. Okay, go back to the other room, listen to it in the, and you're like, oh, I didn't get it. Go back till you get it. And eventually everyone just is like so uptight that like no one's playing well anymore. So we would just play one song like 5 or 6 times, then keep them all, and then maybe listen to it then, or maybe just listen to it like the next day.
Yeah.
And like sift through them that way. So that everyone was way more relaxed. So yeah, so there was no click track, just playing it, like until you're like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah,
just tried to have like a way more relaxed attitude in the studio.
That's great, and I bet that comes through
it,
the music.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool, and I forget how we thought of that, but Chris Walla did this record with us, and he did like a bunch of the other ones. And he has done like so many good records, but even he was like, "Oh, this is a cool way to do stuff." And I was kind of surprised that it's not like a more normal thing.
I think people are afraid of the changes in tempo. I think if you play fast-paced
music,
there is some variance. And you know, when my band records, we use a click track, but it takes us 3 hours to map out the tempo changes,
right?
But when we do a live song, usually it's good enough. Usually it's pretty close, so we probably could do it that way, but we resist it.
And you just might get a feeling. I mean, for me, when I play drums, like I love a click track. Like I feel really comfortable with it, but just not everybody does.
Our drummer does too. He likes it. He'll just blast it.
Yeah. And when I, you know, like that first Thermals record, well, that's just me. Like, of course, there had to be a click track, so I'm just playing drums alone. But for me, I feel like once you get all the levels right, like it's hard to fuck up because you can hear, at least not tempo wise, like
it's beating
you
into your head.
So you know when you've done it right. But then it's just different for a whole band, especially when like the drummer hears the click, but no one else does. Then you get a little bit of click and everyone's playing to the click, you know, when you talk about recording, are you doing like a really like a complicated beat map for the whole song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's because we change tempos and we don't want to be varying from section to section. But
right.
We found this last time we went in and we tried to click out this one song and we found that we would naturally slow down in a way that was better in 3 or 4 places. And so
right.
We were just like, fuck it, we're just going to do this and see how it sounds. And it sounded fine. It sounds of a piece with the ones that are all clicked out. So,
well, that's cool. It's like what all this like recording on computers and like all this shit has actually taught us is that songs need to like get faster and slower in different places.
Right, you have to have the feel to elicit the kind of emotions that we're talking about in the first place. If it's too cold, it doesn't matter if it's a great crafted song, if it has a
you
sort
just
of
automatically
a,
hate it.
An austerity, or at least, I don't know, if it doesn't have a little bit of life to it in the recording itself, I feel like it's hard to connect to.
Well, that's why a lot of times I find songs that have drum machines as the beat, it's like so static that it's hard to, yeah, you feel less.
Especially like rock bands that have some of that drum machine element, or even electronic elements that are peppered into a rock song, that always takes me a little bit out of the energy. I find that can be a little corny. And I have a tough time, like, even if I like a song, if it feels a little bit corny to me, then I have a sort of embarrassment about enjoying it too much. And that tends to happen with, like, electronic drum machines.
Yeah. I think if you love it, you got to get over the embarrassment, though.
Oh, of course. Yeah. That's a very reasonable perspective. But yeah. I'm just not quite there.
I like a lot of music because it's embarrassing.
Right.
Like yeah.
What? like modern pop music that my kids are listening to. I just listen to the shit out of all of it.
It's like good music. Yeah. I mean, it's.
No, I don't think we should be embarrassed. You shouldn't be embarrassed at all. Anyone.
Period.
And for any music.
So no period tastes. They're
unless,
off the table.
You know, I feel like I've liked music that maybe some people would be embarrassed to like, but the fact that it annoyed my friends made me like it even more.
Here's maybe a better way to put it. I'll give you a live example. So Bare Hands, I think we played them on one of our very first episodes, Andy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had put out a record this year, and I think one of the songs is on the radio. It's called 2 a.m., and I kind of like that song, so I was listening through the album at work, and I was really digging it. There were some really, really good songs. It's sort of pop-infused rock or whatever, and as the album was going along, I was like, oh, it's starting to feel a little bit like Zebrahead. There was something that was like, it sort of turned on me, like in a, and I was like, what am I? I just sort of felt confused by the maturity level. So I felt duped a little bit. That's really more of a specific thing.
Aren't they the Christian punk rock band?
Are they Christian? I don't know.
Are they?
That's a great, maybe we should do a lot more research. Maybe I should delve into these feelings a little more specifically
I'm
before
go
I just pop off at the mouth.
You're popping off at your stupid, dumb mouth again.
I'll say, just in case Bare Hands wants to be on the show, I loved the record, but I didn't know whether I personally should feel personally embarrassed or a little, or if I should scrutinize
my
complex.
It's complex.
It can be. I sometimes trump up some complexity to think about to myself that it probably isn't there. But Hutch, I know you brought some great music to share. What is something you'd like to kick us off with this evening?
Let's listen to that Mr. Bones song. I know they're on Good Cheer. I like knew a lot of the Good Cheer bands, mm-hmm. and so I was just like checking out them, and that's when I heard Mr. Bones. And there's so many. I don't know. I like the scene that's happening in Portland right now. Like it gets as they get older, it just gets harder to stay in touch with. Because like someone asked me recently, they're like, "Oh, are there any good house shows in Portland?" And I was like, "Probably, but I don't know. Cause I'm like not getting invited to house shows.
Right?
You know, it's fine." It's fun, but I don't know. But and because someone I knew was like my age, was like, "Oh, no house shows happen anymore." I was like, "No, you're just 40. You don't know. Like, you don't know about that. Yeah. You shouldn't." So I'm sure there are there. Anyway, like a lot of the bands in the scene right now remind me or just sound like '90s bands.
Yeah,
and that just like makes me love them.
Yeah, that's an easy thing to love. But yeah, so were you enjoying Bush today?
Yeah, I did like it. Then the joke was that like Nirvana never made me cry. That's true, and I love Nirvana, but never made me cry. But like, yeah, that Bush song makes me tear up. Because I remembered it makes me think of my ex girlfriend and like what bad taste she had in music.
Whoa, this is really sad.
What did she like?
Sorry,
Bush.
Oh, sure. You were there. Since I sincerely like Bush, it didn't even occur to me that might be on the list. But yeah, you're right.
Well, she has to love Bush, so what else would it be?
It's not 311.
When's Gavin Rossdale going to go solo?
Didn't he? You know, Bush was here like 4 or 5 years ago and played Roseland.
Really?
Yeah.
They play the Roseland.
That's why, like, Gwen Stefani had to leave him, because just, like, she's playing arenas, and he's playing, like, 2,000 people, maybe.
That's a rough fall. I want to talk to you about some comedy, Hutch, because Bridgetown Comedy Festival this week. You're all over it.
Right.
And you're, what, like a relatively recent stand-up?
Yeah, just a year and a half.
About a year and a half, okay. Yeah. And I've read in various interviews sort of how you got started. You were always sort of adjacent to comedy and always a big enthusiast.
Right.
I'm curious less about sort of the mechanics of getting started and more about, like, what was the appeal of actually doing it versus just appreciating it?
I think I just felt like I had ideas for it, and I felt like it would be fun to do. Like, I did, like, theater and acting before. I did music when I was really young, like 10 to 13 or 14. When I got into music, I just, like, it. Music seemed... just like you would always have more control in music or of whatever you did, as opposed to trying to be like an actor where you're reading someone's lines. But I missed that, because acting and like just stuff like that is just performing, I think, is so fun, and it's nice to. I thought it would be cool to do something that's just different from music, just because I've been doing it for so long.
Right. And so that was just another different. I guess another way to scratch that performing itch. So you were creating things sort of consciously from a very young age. What is sort of your earliest memory of creating something, where you said, "I'm going to sit down and I'm going to express myself artistically"? Maybe not in those words, but just that you were aware that you were doing something expressive.
Well, doing like comic books and cartoons for sure, and that was like when I was probably like 8 or 9 to like. I don't know however long, what I thought I would really do with my life. Like, do, like, a cartoon. Like, do, like, a newspaper cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love, like, Bloom County and Calvin and Hobbes Farside. Sure. I felt like that was, like, a really cool time for, like, newspaper comics. I don't even know. Like, you know.
Yeah, those were all really good.
Yeah. Yeah, so for a long time, that's what I thought. I remember being young and, like, trying to do that before anything else, I think.
That's interesting. And so aside from stand-up comedy being an opportunity to have this kind of performative element that you have a little bit of control over, what made you think to yourself that you were funny enough to have the confidence to do this? Was there something inside you like, yeah, I like my ideas, I like the idea of performing, but I'm also, you know, I'm also funny and I can pull this off.
Yeah, but I didn't think about it that way because I was very scared to do it. Like, I was really scared to do it. And I didn't want to, like, I felt like if I had any reputation as a musician, I didn't want to, like, jeopardize that. Like, it would be something that would make me look so dumb that people would think.
It would cast,
you know,
the thermals in
me.
A,
yeah, right?
In a new light, yeah.
And so it wasn't, you know, I was just, yeah, I would go back and forth for so long. Like, went to open mics for like a year and a half, like a lot of open mics, and just be like, okay, I'll do it. I'm going to do it next week. And then just be like, no, I would. And I had my friend Jeremy Layden would go with me, and he does stand up, and he would get up. And so I'd be like, oh, I'll keep going, you know, just for him, support him. And it was cool because he was getting up, but I was still like, so on the fence about it for so long. So it was more just like eventually just something to overcome.
Right.
Even though it wasn't like, I'll be funny. It was just like I should just, I have to do this to, like, get over it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you built yourself up and by attending these things over and over again. So you kind of had to release
like, not
this.
To get over it, like, to like, kick down a wall.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. How do you ever... So I was thinking of hip hop artists. We were talking a little bit about that earlier,
right.
And how they have kind of created a character because it's just them on a microphone. With a stand-up comedy, do you find that there is sort of like a hyper-real element where you are a version of yourself, or is that anything you think about at all?
The more I do it, the more I try to just be myself, I think. I did a barber show tonight. And, like, I feel like I am myself. I mean, like, you're not... I mean, I feel like myself when the thermals are playing shows, too. And it is slightly different. You know, you're performing, and you're not... you're never going to be totally the same as when you're just in a small group of people or just in real life or just one-on-one with someone. But right. But at the same time, like, I feel like I wrote the stuff I write now. I try to make it all true, or at least the setups be true. Like, it's all coming from my own life. Whereas, and I know this is like a common thing, when I started out, I just wrote a bunch of like fake shit. That I thought was funny and may have been funny, but now I would like to not do stuff like that. And so I don't do stuff like that.
Did you find yourself when you were, I guess, maybe working up the nerve to do it's not the right word, but when you finally got up there, were you more hunting for the laugh, I guess? Is that a reason that you would go, you know, kind of more traditional joke way? Or what was the response you were hoping for initially once you'd kicked down the
floor? See, I wasn't even thinking about that. It was more, it just gets to the point in my head. It got to the point in my head where it's like, if you can just do this, like, it doesn't matter the reaction. Like, you just have to do it, and just doing it. And that's a lot about, like, trying new shit, I think. It's like, it doesn't matter what happens. You just try to do something, and then you do it. But I enjoyed it. Like, right away. Like, it went well the first time I did it. And I felt really good, like, in a way that I hadn't for so long. So I kept doing it. I don't know what it would be like if it didn't go.
If you just ate shit right off the bat. Yeah. Are you pretty... Do you think you would have had thick skin about that and stuck with it?
It's so hard to say. Yeah. It's, like, so hard to say. Because it was at a Moose Lodge, like... in, like, deep southeast. Like, it was, like, out of the way and fucking weird. But, like...
That's a fun crowd.
Yeah.
That's the kind of place that you can either build... Like, it can either be a huge confidence boost because it's a crowd that's off the beaten path.
Right.
You make them laugh. You're like, all right, it gives you some reps. Or it can be, like, extra devastating because that group of people found you absolutely unfunny.
Right. But it did go
so
well.
It's a tight wire act, but it went well for you. Okay. And you feel like you got the response that... whether you hope for it or not was enough juice to keep doing it and keep working.
But it wasn't about the response. I just felt good that I had done, like, kicking the door open was just doing it, because then I got over, like, all the, like, insecurity or whatever about doing it. I was like, now I can do it. Because after that, then, like, I went and did, like, 3 more mics that weekend and then just kept doing it. So it was just like, just doing it that one time enabled me, like, then I never, like, felt, like, insecure about just doing it in general.
I hear murders a lot like that.
Yeah. I've heard the same.
Yeah.
I've done sort of like what Hutch was talking about. I've attended a lot of murders.
The first one's
just
crazy.
To be sort of supportive of my friends, but, like, I haven't quite gotten there yet, but it is a challenge. It is a door to kick down.
It just gets easier, though.
It just gets easier and easier every time.
Yeah, like, from that first time, I went out and I killed, like, 4 more people right away. So, you know, it was just a matter of just jumping right in.
Just bang, bang, bang.
You start thinking, this is a good thing.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about the difference between influences with music and influences with comedy. So, from my perspective, I think music influences what I write musically, because I'm listening to something and you can tell that some of that is jumping into the music. I think it's something people can sense. With comedy, you can admire people and you can understand a little bit about the craft from watching them. But where does how do you derive influence for your comedy? Are there people you look to that you admire?
Yeah, definitely.
What is the impact of influence?
Kathy plays with me in the Thermals. We were huge Mr. Show fans. Like, we loved Mr. Show. And it was, like, one of those shows, like Seinfeld or The Simpsons or Futurama, or, like, 90s SNL from when I was in high school.
The
like,
State,
a lot
for
of
me.
The shit you watch, yeah, the stuff you watch over and over, kind of, like, your sense of humor gets based upon all these, you know, whatever you think are great examples of it. Mm-hmm. So, like, one of the coolest things, the year we Thermal signed a Sub Pop, David Cross signed a Sub Pop.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, to do 2 or 3 comedy records, but, like, almost at the same time, and it was probably the 15th anniversary show, but he was there, and, like, you know, like, Mudhoney, all these cool people are there, and we're like, oh, fuck, David Cross, you know, yeah. We'd, like, corner, we seriously, like, physically, he was looking at a poster against the wall, and we, like, all just, like, mobbed him, like, super hard. Because it was like he was like the coolest person at that show to us, no matter like whoever, you know.
I think his record, cool Shut Up You Fucking Baby, was put out on
right,
Sub Pop.
Right, right. So that was that. No,
a legendary stand-up act.
No, there are three records. There's It's Not Funny and then Bigger and Blacker, right? But yeah, but that was that first one. There's that tour documentary. But we, like at that time, like Sub Pop just started getting involved, like in a, you know, they started putting out more comedy records slowly, but they would, they were like in the scene, they got in the comedy scene like 2003 or two,
which is really, I mean, early
adopters really
cool. for what
it's
it is
really
now.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so like we would go to Seattle, like David Cross and John Benjamin and Todd Barry brought Tinkle to Seattle, so it was those three plus Dimitri Martin, Heather Lawless, Dimitri Martin, Eugene Merman.
Oh, sure.
All before they were on shows. And then maybe like 5 years later, Sub Pop did a show that was Kristen Schaal hosting for like Patton Oswalt, David Cross, Todd Barry, Eugene Merman.
Yeah.
Like all like amazing comedy shows.
Just a,
so that
an all-star
was like
bill.
All so that those years were like a huge, I mean, there's like old stuff that I loved. I know everyone says Richard Pryor, but Richard Pryor is just like fucking amazing. And Kathy and I would like always watch Richard Pryor stuff. But that era, like, you know, mid 2000s, like that whole crew, like we got to like see them, you know, and do shows with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like a huge, huge influence for me.
I'm curious what you think about the Portland comedy scene, because it feels like it's as strong as any scene nationwide. And you've sort of rode a long wave of Portland ascendancy as well.
Well, the Portland comedy scene has been going on for so long.
Yeah.
And I really only like know it closely since maybe 2011 or 12. So like in the, you know, not that long. But like how it is right now, or how it is like when I started like getting to know it, reminded me of like late 90s Portland when I moved here, like how the music scene was. And just that, like, just people were doing shows just like wherever, just
right,
like in basements and cafes and people's houses and just like wherever. And like no one's making a ton of money, but everyone's just really supportive and engaged in the scene. Everyone's really friendly, and just like the scene is just very vibrant in general.
And that's what the comedy scene is like, right? That's what you're saying. It's very
No, that's what I mean.
Oh yeah, okay.
I'm thinking, but yeah, I mean the parallel is there. But like specifically, I'm talking about like the comedy scene right now. Like you just have a lot of really just supportive, positive people running shit.
How do you keep that going in a scene like this?
You got to ask them.
How did it change musically? How did you see that move away musically?
Well, okay, part of it is getting older, but a lot of it is just seeing a lot of successful bands move here, and then bands getting successful here, but really like the biggest bands, I don't know, like Decembrists got successful here. Sleater-Kinney like half moved here. Modest Mouse moved here. Steve Malcolm's moved here like for a while. Like
the Shins, they were from
right
here, right?
Moved here.
Yeah.
So you see like so many bands started moving to Portland, thinking Portland was where you like got big, but like a lot of the bands that got big here were already big and then moved here or just had super rare luck. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I've seen the scene change so much, but that's why, like, you know, when we're talking about bands like the Good Cheer bands, like, I like that crop of bands right now because I feel like Portland has gone through the kind of like weepy, like three floor tom bands, and then gone through like all the dance stuff.
I feel like that's still hanging on.
No, that's going to hang on. No, that's not going away. But like also there's like, I mean, I just like what I like, which is like rock bands. And I know like that, like right now, there's like a ton of young rock bands that are really good, but it hasn't been like that, you know, for a while, I don't feel.
Well, we better play some music or people will get mad at us. Andy, what do you got to share tonight?
I'm going to play you a song by one of my favorite punk rock bands from Seattle called Wimps.
Oh, sure.
They're playing Bridgetown this week. They're going to be at the Killer Rockstar Showcase at Doug Fir. I think it's on Saturday night at 9 o'clock.
And we should say, you know, Bridge City Comic Festival, Hutch, you're going to be all over that thing. So people should look that up to see when you're playing. But you're doing stand-up sets all week. The Thermals are playing a show this week.
Right.
So want to make sure everyone checks that out. It's I'm sure all of our listeners are invested in what's going on there. But it's another killer lineup this year. So want to make sure everyone checks out the shows all week long.
Yeah, the song.
And the Wimps are playing
Playing on Saturday. It's a really good lineup. It's Rhea Butcher, Nathan Brandon, Amy Miller, and then a special guest headliner.
Excellent.
It's a secret.
What's the name of the
song? Playing. It's hosted by Jason Traeger.
So okay.
Check it out.
Excellent.
And I'm going to play a song off their new album, Suitcase, called Middle Ages.
Back hurts! Feet too! Don't know what to do!
So good.
Yeah, very good.
I like them because they write songs about getting older and they're awesome fast punk rock songs still. I relate to the subject matter.
Hutch, I want to play a little small game called Mood Music. I'm going to give you a situation and you tell me the artist or the song that you you know, would associate with that or would be good for that. I'll start with a softball. Cleaning the House.
Strokes.
The Strokes. Anything in particular?
First two records.
Okay. You've just been fired from a job you hate, but you need to pay the bills.
Hot Snakes.
Oh, Hot Snakes. That's pretty good.
Right.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect.
Suicide Invoice, obviously.
There we go.
Sure, sure. Let's see. What's another good one? You are getting yourself in the right headspace to attend your first orgy. There's a lot of excitement, maybe a little bit of nerves. You know.
Prince.
That's sure. Perfect. Yeah, that would do it. That would put you at ease. You almost have to go to an orgy.
I would have went with KMFDM, personally. Something really heavy and industrial.
Are you going to rob the orgy?
No, I just want to be amped.
Something to really put you on edge. I think we're going to different orgies.
Oh, I have a thing where I'm going. Whenever I'm going to an event, I like to listen to the opposite kind of music that I'm going to be singing. Oh,
okay. So you really want to go to like a super sensual, oily, candlelit orgy.
Yes. Then I'll listen to grindcore the whole way.
That orgy does exist for you. It might be in Germany, but it does exist.
I don't want to go to the KMFDM orgy at all. That is not for me.
Neither do
I'm
I.
With you.
I want to go to the opposite of it. That's what I'm planning on.
I want to go to like the Bryan Adams orgy, I think. That's the kind I want. I want everything I do it for you.
Whoa, that sounds like a nightmare.
Would it be like would it be Robin Hood themed?
Well, I don't think it would have to be. I just want soft, you know. I'm not a big orgy guy, I'm afraid. I don't think I can. I don't think I have the right constitution for the orgy, but Bryan Adams, sure.
How about some like Enya? Something like some
Sail Away?
Some tantric.
That would be pretty good.
New age music.
Sure. Yeah. Those are my situations. Good answers. All cool. Plausible, believable.
Cool. They're all true.
So, you were talking about rules for the thermals and just kind of guidelines as you're creating that. Do you have anything like that for your own comedy?
I think, you know, just saying that I'm going to base stuff, base jokes on stuff that's true is like a rule or a new rule. Yeah, you know, I'm sure there are. I have to think about it for a second because it's like sometimes you just kind of think of things naturally and don't write it down as a, you know, as a rule, and then you realize you're doing it. I think there's a lot of performance. You know, it's so weird. It's like I'm not even 2 years in, so it's so hard to talk about it. Like with any, like I'm still just learning so much. Like every time I do it, like I learn something new. Like I expect to go like at least like 8 years, maybe like 10 before I would ever be able to say like this is what it's like doing it. Because yeah. It's just like, but that's what's so fascinating and so fun about it is that it's just different all the time. Because I'm so fresh at it. And that's one of, you know, that's one of the most fun things about doing it. Just not knowing what the hell I'm doing.
So you guys have been touring for a long time.
And right.
You've been on the road. Have you ever been stabbed?
Yeah, like a couple times every tour.
Figured.
Yeah.
People are into stabbing now.
You just never went out of style. You just have to get used to it like anything else.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the listeners can't see Hutch, but he does carry himself like someone who's taken a couple
I have
of
no
steps.
Eyes. Yeah. They can't see that, but I have no eyes.
For some
reason. Both of my eyes were both stabbed, and then the sockets were both stabbed a couple times each. Equal amount of times.
Man, which makes it hard
crazy.
To develop that human connection that in your comedy. But,
you know,
right.
That's already injured, so you kind of would just lean into the stab.
Well, if you can see, but there's like a small dagger. In my left eye right now, like I just left the last one in because it was just easier.
At that point, yeah. Sometimes right. The you like, know, hey, cure is worse than the disease, you know?
Yeah, it's already, hey, you can't stab this eye socket. It's already stabbed.
It's like leaving a pile
it's
of
currently,
tickets on your window.
Yeah.
Like, don't give me another ticket. I already have tickets.
Yeah, I have the one. Yeah.
Is there a place that you guys would choose to be stabbed? Let's say you have to be stabbed someplace. Where would you pick? It's not life-threatening. It's not going to be, it's going to leave a scar and it's going to be painful. But you're not going to die from
like
it.
In the leg. What about like in a movie or something where they like know the exact spot? You know, just somewhere right
in between
missing some organs.
The stomach and intestine. Just like right there. Yeah. No, that'd be dead.
Torso
shitty.
Would be my last choice.
How about
anywhere.
Right through the bicep?
Oh, that's not
You'd
bad.
You'd probably go for the butt, actually.
Oh,
just
sure.
Like,
I feel like I could take a butt
in
stab.
In the butt.
Yeah.
My
or
grandpa
thigh.
Got stabbed Fatty. In the butt.
Did he?
He got dragged out of
with
a car.
With a bayonet?
By a gang of teens.
Oh,
and stabbed. In the butt.
Huh. Man. I'm sort of scared of being stabbed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it'll ever happen in my life, but it's an irrational fear that I have. Very slow, like a low burn on the fear scale, but it's there. Hutch, you want to play some more music for us?
Yes. Let's listen to the Summer Cannibals song.
Do you think you got one more quick game in you before we take off?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's low stakes. This is a game called License Plate Detective.
There are no losers.
Andy is a keen observer of the human condition, and he will often come across plates that are very clearly vanity plates, but it's sort of opaque as to what the owner of that vanity plate might be trying to convey. So Andy records them, and we just try to figure out what they might be going. All Portland plates.
Mostly Portland plates. I did see my first Washington vanity plate the other day, and it's in here.
What have you come across, Andy? What's the first one that stymied
you?
What
am I going to guess the profession of the person?
No, you just have to guess what they were going for. Like, what are some possibilities for what this unclear license plate is?
PM, the letters PMINST.
PMINST.
Is that like an after-hours Instagram account? Like,
yeah, late-night Instagram. That's exactly what it is.
PM Insta.
Or it's for, like, night school, so the late institute. So it's an advocate for late adult education programs.
That guy takes
that work around
classes.
Your work schedule.
Yeah, that's just a dude who's got his shit together and takes night classes and wants people to know.
Or big PM Dawn fan, and like, what's your go-to music when you're feeling down? PM instantly.
That's right, no, I love that. That's it. Please let that be it. No, I love that.
I'm certain that's it. I'm pretty confident.
It was an old man in a red pickup truck from Washington.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, such a, he doesn't even call him PM Dawn. He's like such a deep fan, yeah.
Did they do that song, I Will Never Find Another Lover? Was that PM Dawn? Oh, no. PM Dawn was Take a Trip Down Memory Bliss or something like
set
that.
Set a drift down memory bliss.
Okay. That was the one. Okay. So what's the next plate you saw, Andy?
This one, I know what they were trying to do, but maybe they were out of letters at the DMV and they had to go with this. It was the letter I, the number 8, and then the word rain.
I ate rain?
I know they're trying to say I hate rain, right?
Are they trying to say that?
Because I feel like so. I think they love rain.
Yeah, if you have to make a choice about which letter you're cutting off, you need to keep the H as critical to meaning. You know,
hate rain makes more sense. It kind of almost looks like I brain.
Sure. Like I infinity rain.
Yeah.
Infinity on its side. They don't let you do that on its side. I don't know. It's or is it apostrophe hate? Like it's British. Mm-hmm. Like I ate rain.
Maybe. I like that example, too. They're English, yeah.
They wanted to convey their accent.
Right.
They did.
No one corrected them. Oh, this guy must be awfully thirsty, they thought at the DMV. No one thought, God. No, here in the States.
No, he nailed it.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be cool, too, because, like, he moved to Portland from England not knowing it just rained here all the time,
the sunniest place he could find in the U.S.
Very disappointed.
It followed
no
him. He's bitterly disappointed. All right, what's the next one, Andy?
Mount MT. The letters MT, and then the word FUND.
Mount Fund.
Or empty fund? So is it a poor person?
It could have been
a poor driver.
I thought it was.
They spent their last $300 on a vanity plate that's going to be poorly understood.
They live at the Mount Fund D. They have a really fun dick. They went and named the ranch after it.
You were pretty convinced it was mountain. You said mountain before you even said what the letters were.
Mountain Fund Dick.
The Mountain Fund could be a.
Maybe that's what they call Mountain Dew. Like, they really like Mountain Dew. They like it so much they call it Mountain Fund Dick.
I'm not sure that Fund Dick is an actual term. That's the thing. So I agree that if it was that, it would be extra confusing as a vanity plate.
It's very confusing.
You got one more for us?
Yeah. This one is great. H-O-Z-R-O.
H-O-Z-R-O?
Hozro. Or Horzoro? Or...
I
don't know. It's definitely... That one only makes sense to that person.
I feel like that was an inversion of horse with, like, a little attitude. I was going to be... It was going to be whores. But that it was too close to whores and not the, like, the badass modern horse that they were going for. So they maybe just, like, flipped it around and... kind of fudging it.
Hasbro.
I think it's possible that some of these people who get these license plates are as disappointed by them as we are. I forget to have empathy for these people. I often just chastise them in my mind, but sometimes maybe they were duped. Then you just end up with this confusing thing that you paid a premium for.
Yeah, Hasbro probably was trying to get Hot Rod, and he was like, what? They put a Z in the middle and took the D off the end? What the hell?
Hotro. Now Hasbro. No one will know what I'm talking about.
Well... I paid $800 for it.
Yep. I guess I'll just keep it for these 2 years. And then that's the kind of thing that also extends the tragedy, because then you've paid so much that you end up putting this in a frame in your garage, and it has a long life of shame that you feel compelled to carry through because you spent such a premium on it.
How much did it cost?
I have no idea. But what, you know, what's...
We've never looked into it.
It's $250 for renewal now.
100-something episodes.
Like that.
It's we've already never looked into it.
Yeah, so it's already too much. Anything above that. Now, I don't know. What is... If it was $35, would I pay it for just something ridiculous? I think I would. Mm-hmm. Andy, what's the minimum, or the, I guess the maximum extra that you would pay for?
For a license plate?
For a license plate.
To express my, like,
to express
biggest
anything.
Dreams.
Maybe you could intentionally develop one of these.
And in Oregon, it's on the front and back of your car, so they catch you coming and going. They really do.
Is $50 too much for you to
I would pay,
take the plunge?
I would pay $40.
But what would it be? What would your plate be?
Our friend Tyler has always wanted to get a vanity plate that was 420 PMP because he thought the 420 pimp was like a hilarious internet handle, and he always wanted to be considered the 420
cool.
pimp.
Yeah, like so 420 handles don't get pulled over by cops.
Right, it's a terrible idea. But it also is a little bit hidden in our normal Oregon alphanumeric scheme, so it's a little bit ambiguous. Andy, do you have any thoughts about what your vanity plate would be?
My problem, let's see.
TB for life?
Oh, not so much anymore.
You're a big tuberculosis fan?
I'm a huge tuberculosis fan.
You wish it was the late 1800s?
I'm a fan of it sucking. I hate it. So it's like, you love it to death.
What sort of Taco Bell themed would be on?
Man, I'd want like quesarito with like no vowels.
Can you fit that?
Yeah, I knew this kid in Oklahoma City who would tattoo Taco Bell on his knuckles.
Oh, man.
And would get free Taco Bell.
He was a local celebrity.
He was, yeah. He was a punk celebrity, at least.
Well, thanks for playing some Slides to Play Detective. I think that was a successful round.
Right, I liked it.
I think we learned... I've learned to open my heart a little bit to some of these people. And
too much.
And not be so harsh on them. Andy, you got a song to play?
Yeah, man. Since it's Memorial Day, the day we're recording this, I felt like I had to play something about food or like barbecues. So T-Pain did a remix of the song Panda by Designer. He did his own. It says it's a freestyle. I don't know, man. It's pretty dope.
Is this like post-jail T-Pain? Is this since he's been, wasn't he in jail for like 2 years?
Oh, yeah. This is like from like April. This just came out. Oh,
okay. This is hot T-Pain.
This is his freestyle on Panda. Everybody's doing freestyles on Panda, but his is the best. And T-Pain had a pretty good meal, and he's going to talk us through it. So
all right.
Check this out.
Here it is.
I mean, the shit can't be against the rules now. I fuck with these niggas. Get the nigga that did Designer ad-libs. Get him on the phone, because this shit about to be lit. Lego. Pen. Hey! I got hoes up in Brooklyn. My Jamaican bitches be cooking. She sit me down at the table. I let you know how I was looking. Rice and peas, macaroni, cheese, collard greens. No, she don't bullshit. She Steph Curry with the curry chicken. She just make a whole bunch of good shit. I've been at the golf. I got the rice sitting on the tall truck. And they hit me with some Benzie. Give me them brown paper bags, give me more bucks. I go and find a secure line with my dogs brought down in Florida. I stack it, pack it, pack it in that order. Hold up, I'm all the way up. I need to put some in my soda. I don't need no lunch, I'ma go get a bunch of Asian bitches stuffed in the Rover. My legacy, fuck that. They thought that T-Pain was gonna come back. Now go tell them that when you run back, you a hoe, so you already done that. Hold up, I'm all the way up. I need to put some in my Sprite, bitch. If you think you're doing it, I'm about to ruin it. You niggas gonna learn the night, bitch. If you think I'm lit now, watch what happened when I come and turn on the light switch. I'm on that pen and shit, I come and handle it. Boy, that ain't shit but a flight, bitch. I mean, really though, really. If you think about it, really think about it, how hard do they really go?
Bitch, I'm really dumb.
Yeah. Woo. You really know. I ain't ready, bro. Pen. Let's go, bitch. Pen.
Hey, that's a pillow though.
Yeah. I got bitches in the Bronx, nigga. They can get me in the back door. No. Rob a nigga in the trap house. Bitch, you just walked in the trap door. No. Cross the border in the Bugatti. Yeah. Go put the bricks in the rap bar. Oh. They been sleeping on pizzle. Somebody go ask these niggas what they taking a nap for. Illuminati, that's a squad, nigga. God. Without the shit, I would have been dead. Yeah. But I swear to God, I'ma keep killing niggas and I put that shit on my kids' head. Cash, no, I'm an asshole. So don't fuck with pizzle and his bread. Woo. I'm the type of nigga that'll
find a nigga, then go find a chick and get that bitch head. Yeah, I'm all the way up. Don't need to stop me, amigo. Don't put your eye on that people, cause I turn the back of your head to a people. Then kick in the door and murk all your people. You already know the weapon is lethal. Flip the clip, got get back, pull the hair trigger. Yeah, nigga, back for the sequel. I got problems in my head, nigga. Smoking that shit from the West Coast. The major key is when you're hating me. You can fuck around, get your neck broke. You fuck around with the wind squad, they gon' find your body at the Tesco. The summer coming and you coming with nothing. You ready, pussy nigga, let's go. All I say is panda panda and they handle my shit. While I'm chilling up in Alabama trying to show a bitch how fast a Lambo can get. With all this green up under these gold chains, they mistaking me for Pippa Kid. Bitch, I'm in platinum, I'm coming after them, passing them. All I do is fucking win.
I got bras out in Cali. I got hoes getting ratchet. Hit dispensaries and grab it. Wrap it all up in that plastic. USPS, I'm a tracker. 2-day priority, I have it. And making the meeting, I'm texting. 200 racks in the mattress. I don't know about y'all, but I'm a street nigga. Ain't got a sound like nobody, I'm just me, nigga. Been on tour with T-Pain, that's for free, nigga. That's why I still fuck with them bricks and the weed, nigga. And that's why I hop in my J. My nigga gon' hop in that Benz. My nigga gon' hop in that Porsche. And no, we don't need no new friends. Cause I gon' hop in that Ghost. And yeah, that boy still got the meal. Look at the lip on them Fords. Look at the motherfucking rims. And I keep trying to tell you I'm from Florida, babe. Still 50 grand short from that Mercedes, babe.
Well, Hutch Harris, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Yeah, thanks
really
for having
appreciate
me.
You hanging out and shooting the shit and playing some great music. What's the best people to find out information about you, your music, and your comedy?
TheThermals.com. Twitter @TheThermals, Facebook/TheThermals, Instagram @TheThermals.
Easy to remember.
That's it.
Easy to find.
Make sure you hit a Bridgetown Comedy Fest
website. Bridgetown Comedy, you're going to be all over
that.
For
all set dates and everything.
Do you know a couple places you're playing? Any place we can plug in particular? Or should we just drive people to the website and have them find you?
I would just, you know, I know, like, I'm going to do Trio on Wednesday. On Thursday, the Thermals are playing Lance Bang's show at Revolution Hall.
Excellent.
That'll be cool. I have shows every day through Sunday. So yeah, I think is it bridgetowncomedy.com?
That is correct. Cool. Check that out. Check out the full lineup. Buy a pass. See Hutch multiple times throughout the weekend. Thanks again so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
You got one more track to take us home on. What's the last song you'd like to play?
It's Sabonis, More Time.
Excellent. Well, for Hutch Harris, for Andy, for Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage. Thanks a lot.
So now that we've won Best in Portland, I want to thank everyone for choosing us for Best Podcast in Portland. And we're done. Show over. We quit. Fuck all y'all.
It's curtains on Hot Garbage.
It was a big trick.
Go out on top.
Yep.
Cool.